Can anyone tell us what was the essence of what Krishna taught us yesterday? We were in the middle section, or where were we? In the morning we did the middle section, in the afternoon we did the end section of chapter 12. Yes? Okay, the qualities present in the pure devotee. And why did he tell us of those qualities? So we know the standard of devotion, very high standard, the very high standard of devotion, yes? Yeah, although Srila Prabhupada says they cannot be developed artificially. But still we should know in what direction we are supposed to go. If we see we are going opposite way, we should know that we are going the wrong way. So these qualities, we should see them emerging in ourselves, and we should see them, we should expect that they will emerge in ourselves as we keep chanting and practicing Krishna consciousness. Yes. What else about these qualities? Sorry? There are different grades of devotees. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is the section before. Yeah, so there are different types of devotees, yes? The one who has attraction for Krishna, his mind, his intelligence are completely fixed on Krishna. Actually, it says he has achieved constant remembrance of Krishna. Okay. So the next stage is the one who is trying to remember Krishna constantly by practicing the rules and regulations of devotional service, by seeing the deity, by trying to control his mind, to fix the mind on Krishna by all means. So this is a practicing devotee. That's how Prabhupada explained, yes? And the other level was to, if you can't engage your mind in Krishna, your consciousness in Krishna, then at least do something. Don't just sit idle. Pick up the broom, clean the temple, or if you are more powerful, build the temple, do something for Krishna. And this will count as transcendental activity, and it will gradually develop into the next stages. Yes, very nice. And? If you cannot do that, then you should sacrifice the result of your activities for Krishna. Yes. So if you cannot engage directly in Krishna consciousness, that's what Prabhupada was saying, then you should work through indirectly. You should just perform your work, but you should practice, because the reason why we cannot take to Krishna consciousness is we haven't yet developed enough understanding. Or maybe Prabhupada said we might have some understanding, but there might be some material impediment. So the person is advised that either you should work directly for Krishna, or you should work and give up the fruit of the activities. And by doing that, what will happen?
Slowly gradually, on an indirect path of yoga.
slowly the person will elevate himself, will come to the level of knowledge. And once he gets there, then again Prabhupada told us it's he may develop knowledge and get into searching for the Lord through the indirect process, developing further knowledge, coming to the point of meditation upon the Lord. So this is, we remember, that's the indirect process. However, in the end, Krishna puts the stress on you should work. You should renounce the fruit of activities. So we have to be situated in one of those platforms. And basically, either we should work and sacrifice the fruit, or we should work for Krishna, or be more involved in Krishna consciousness. These are four different choices that Krishna gave us. And the other path of meditating, developing knowledge, these are, it's considered to be difficult, it's more difficult, and it's usually not advised by Krishna. But in case one cannot do this, cannot do that, so we have to be situated somewhere around there. Then there will be progress. These are all different steps progressing towards Him. Something else? Krishna's mercy. Nice. Today you're saying it with a smile. Practice for a day. Very good. Practice makes perfect. Good. Yes. We have to practice it. Yes. Okay. So anything more? Or we continue? We jumped into the ocean of the last six chapters with a smile, Rukmini. Some devotees were saying that these six chapters have passed very fast, but if you look at the chapters themselves, they are much shorter than the first six ones. The first six ones had many verses and long purports, many of them. Whereas the middle chapters, you know, there was 20 verses, there was, 30. So there were less verses, and if you remember well, the whole chapter 10 and 11, there was hardly any purports, because Krishna was just describing all his opulences, and there's what you want to comment about this, we are just reading it and appreciating it and trying to fathom the greatness of Krishna. Then there was the universal form. So there also, you know, how much can we talk more about it than what is said there? It's so unimaginable, it's so difficult to conceive. So it was much shorter. That section was shorter. However, it is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita.
And we had two classes each day,
so we went faster.
Beginning is only one class,
and yeah, also. Parallel,
but
yeah.
Only two classes all the time.
Yeah.
So we have a double.
Yeah, because we didn't have any other teacher at that time. Adipurush Prabhu is coming now. I had asked him to come earlier, but he could not come earlier, so we had to adjust. So this is now, we are going to enter the third section. What was the first section about? Anybody remembers? 1 to 6, what was it about? Mostly Karma Yoga. What did we learn in that section?
Hmm?
Yeah, first thing was in that chapter, the living entity was identified as different from the body, as a spirit soul, eternal, unchanging, and so on. And then what else did we learn in those first six chapters? What happens to the spirit soul? Yeah. Okay. But what next with him?
It changes body depending upon the actions that it has performed. That's when we studied about the karma and then karma yoga.
So we heard how the living entity gets his body. And how he gets another body, how he changes body, how he's entangled in that body, and how he can gradually become disentangled from that body, and especially come to the level of knowledge through various kinds of yogas, and particularly through karma yoga. So Krishna took us from the bottom of the living entity not wanting to serve Krishna, I shall not fight, to the level of, I will fight for my happiness, to karma, just doing some karma for one's own happiness, and then the idea of actually understanding that there is a higher truth, there's something higher to attain, and therefore agreeing to sacrifice for attaining something superior. So we studied karma yoga, and we saw how through karma yoga the living entity comes to the level of knowledge and becomes qualified to then enter into higher types of yogas which bring about transcendental realization of the Brahman and realization of Paramatma. And Krishna particularly described the Ashtanga Yoga process by which the living entity focuses, meditates on the super soul within the heart. So we saw all that, how the living entity becomes enlightened very gradually. And we saw this takes very, very long time. And then in the second section, then what happened? Krishna showed how ultimately the goal of the Ashtanga Yogi is to become a devotee. And how this devotion is the essence. It is the essence of all practices. And it is the topmost practice, the safest practice, and it is a direct path which takes us directly to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whereas the other processes take us very gradually first to the Brahman and then to the Paramatma and then maybe to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna stressed how Bhakti Yoga is most practical, most powerful and takes us to the highest realization and how this is what is most dear to Krishna and how Krishna reciprocates with his devotee. Which was not described for the karma yogi. It did not describe how he will reciprocate. But we actually heard how Krishna helps the bhakti yogi up to the point of actually liberating him from the ocean of birth and death. So that was very interesting. But the Bhagavad Gita does not end there. Even though we saw we had practically reached the level of love of Godhead in the end. Krishna described how there is a loving relationship that grows between the bhakta and Krishna. The bhakta, by practicing bhakti yoga, he develops such qualities which attract Krishna. And he becomes dear to Krishna. So, and then we were very excited. Now we are becoming dear to Krishna. And the next thing is Arjuna Uvacha. Arjuna asked some questions. He has a question. And what is going to be the question? The question is going to be something unexpected again. What is this? He's going to ask about all kinds of terms and what they are and what it means. So in this chapter is called Nature, the Enjoyer, and Consciousness. It is otherwise called sometimes Prakriti, Purusha, Ishvara, and it is also called in Sanskrit Prakriti, Purusha, Vibhag, Yoga. Prakriti, Purusha, Vibhag, Yoga. So we will see here, actually Prakriti means nature, and Purusha, of course, means the enjoyer. And we will see in this chapter that there are two enjoyers, two Purushas. One is the soul, and one is the super soul. So the consciousness that Prabhupada refers to in English here refers more to the super soul, who is the source of consciousness. So this particular chapter here, chapter 13, mostly concerns itself with the knowledge of the body and the knower of the body. Knowledge of the soul and the super soul, knowledge of the body and so on. It is an important chapter because it distinguishes between the soul and the super soul. In general, this section, the last section, will deal with Jnana Yoga and how Jnana Yoga leads to bhakti. As we saw previously, how the Karma Yoga will lead gradually one to bhakti. So in this time, we are going to see how Jnana Yoga is going to gradually lead one to devotion. This section is important for us, even though it's difficult. It is said that the first section, when we understand the first section, it should help us to come to devotional service, should convince us to come to the point of devotional service, understanding the intricacies of action, karma, akarma, vikarma, and we should understand our frail, fragile position in this world, and it should lead us gradually to work for Krishna. And this section, Jnana Yoga, besides showing us how Jnana will lead to bhakti, it will also serve to help us remain steady in bhakti and progress further in bhakti. Because we will begin working for Krishna, but along the way, as we know, there will be many difficulties. The path, you know, the life in this world is not easy. So we will encounter many difficulties. And if we have knowledge, then that knowledge is going to help us keep our intelligence focused on the goal, keep ourselves, to keep our head out of the water. So if we can clearly make the distinctions between the body, the mind, the intelligence, what is the world, what is the material world, what is the super soul, what is the soul, and so on, where the, what is the source of consciousness. So if we have clear idea about all these things, it should help us when we face difficulties. So the first section dealt with the soul. First section also dealt with karma. The soul, karma. Yes. Yes, there are five topics in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhuji is saying, Akinchana Prabhu. So we will deal with some of the topics here. They are found throughout the Bhagavad Gita, but here, yes, Purusha, Prakriti, more information about the Prakriti. So Srila Prabhupada talks about this purport, about this chapter at the end of the purport to chapter 1, and, verses 1 and 2. He says, starting with the 13th chapter, how the living entity comes into contact with material nature and how he is delivered by the Supreme Lord through the different methods of fruitive activities, cultivation of knowledge, and the discharge of devotional service are explained. Although the living entity is completely different from the material body, he somehow becomes related. This also is explained. So a lot of knowledge in this chapter regarding the soul, its entanglement in the material world, and how it gets free from that. There are different sections which you may want to note. 1 to 7 will define mostly the kshetra and kshetragya, the field and the knower of the field. 8 to 12 describes the process of knowledge, jnanam. 13 to 19 describes the object of knowledge, which is called jnanam. Arjuna asks questions in the beginning and Krishna is going to answer one after the next. 20 to 26 will describe Prakriti, Purusha and their relationship. And 27 to 35 will describe the vision of knowledge. So it is not that we are going to find something very new in this section, but it will be presented through the angle of Gyan, the different presentation. So we begin here with Arjuna asking some questions and Krishna immediately beginning to answer. The first verse are 6 questions by Arjuna, or it's one question within which he asks for 6 definitions. And in the second verse, Krishna immediately begins answering and gives the definition for the first 2 items, kshetra and kshetragya. Arjuna uvacha prakritim purusham ceva kshetram kshetragnyam eva cha etad veditum icchami jnanam yeyam cha keshava. Sri Bhagavan uvacha idam shariram kaunteya kshetram ityabhidhiyate etad yo vettitam praho kshetragnya iti tadvidaha. Arjuna said, my dear Krishna, I wish to know about Prakriti, nature, Purusha, the enjoyer, and the field, and the knower of the field, and of knowledge, and the object of knowledge. Why would Arjuna ask such a question? Why would he ask such a question? It is actually not always clearly explained. Not sure what happened to him at that stage. Why he asked? Somebody speculated that maybe it's because Krishna said, if you can't do this, you should do that. If you can't do this, you could do that. And if you can't, if you, at some point he said you should do, you should cultivate knowledge. Better than knowledge is meditation. And so somebody speculated like this, that maybe he's thinking, oh, then how to cultivate knowledge? How to cultivate knowledge? Otherwise, I don't know of any other explanation. If anyone has, they can contribute. Why Arjuna is suddenly asking for this? But he is bringing us into the field of jnana. These are questions which are trying to identify terms which are used in the Jnanakanda section in the Upanishads. In the Upanishads, you'll hear of all these things, the Purusha, the Prakriti, Kshetra, Kshetragya, Jnanam, Jnanam. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, this body, O son of Kunti, is called the field. And one who knows this body is called the knower of the field. So if you notice, Krishna has chosen which items he will answer first. In previous questions, he was going from the beginning, whatever Arjuna asked first, he was answering first, second, third, fourth. But in this one, Arjuna asked, what is Prakriti, what is Purusha? But Krishna did not answer that question. First he answers, Kshetra, Kshetragya. So this is exactly the same thing that he did in chapter 2 when he began instructing Arjuna. Actually, this verse number 2 is similar to a verse which we studied in chapter 2. Which verse? No. What does he say here? This body, O son of Kunti, is called the field, and one who knows this body is called the knower of the field. What is he doing in this verse? He's what? He's making the distinction between body and spirit. He is again establishing the existence of the soul as different from the body. 216. Avinashi tu tad vidhi ina sarvam idam tatam vinasham avyasyasya. Yes? Yeah? Or another one, what was the first verse where Krishna made the distinction between the body? What was that? Natve vaham jatulasam. Yeah? Natvam nimedhanadipaha. Nacheva vna bhavishyama. Sarvevayam. Atara param. So it could be that one. Or the next one. Dehi nosmin yada dehe. That's the one. Within this body, there is a dehi. Within the deha, there is a dehi. Dehi nosmin yada dehe. Kaumaram yovanam jara. Tata dehantara prapte dhirastatra nam muhyati. So he's beginning, so this is the basic knowledge. Whenever you enter the field of knowledge, so the first thing is, we are not this body. We said that before. This is where it starts. So this is very difficult field for those who are identified with the body, because they cannot understand that very first point. So there is no hope for understanding the rest. So the first thing, basic knowledge, should be this one. Don't worry, practice makes perfect. By tomorrow, we will know. We are not this body. Krishna will make an arrangement. Idam shariram, he says, this body, Konteya, that is the kshetra. It is called the field. So the field is the body, the material body, and we will understand later on, it means the gross body, the subtle body, whatever makes up the subtle body, the entire body, that is the material self, This is called the kshetra. And kshetra actually means a field. It's a field. So why is the body called field? It's where we do some activities. So it's like a space. It's like a space with which one works. We are working within this body. What are other characteristics of a field? It's at the level of agriculture. In a field, we sow seeds, the farmer. So Prabhupada actually compares the soul to a farmer. The soul is a farmer, and he sows seeds. What are the seeds? The karma, the activities. And from these seeds grow fruit. And what is the fruit? What is? Different bodies, yeah, in one sense, yes. Pleasure and pain, yes. Happiness and distress. This is the fruit. So we are the farmer. We plow the field. We do some activity. And the fruit comes in the form of happiness and distress. Yes. Srila Prabhupada, in one of his lectures, he also says, kshetra is like a platform. It's like a platform on which we are dancing. The soul is dancing. And in order to dance, when we want to dance, what do we mean? We need a platform, a stage. When we are going to dance, we need a stage. And when the dancer is dancing, he knows he's on the stage. So Prabhupada says this is the stage is the body, and the soul is the knower, is the dancer. And the dancer knows that he's dancing on the stage. So we should also know that. We should know that we are not this body. We are different from the body. This body is just a platform from which we act in this world. But we are not this body. And we have other activities which we do not enact from the platform of that body. So this is the kshetra. What is the kshetra made up of? Senses. Yeah. The body is made up of senses. Senses of action, senses of perception, and there is also the inner sense, the mind. So this body is made up of senses. What is another characteristic of a field? When you picture a field in your mind, what do you see? What is another characteristic? Some unwanted things, weeds are also there. Okay, there can be weeds. When we think of a field, yes? And there is a limit, yes. A field means usually there's a fence around the field. It is limited. So that is also one of the images that is given by the field. You can do parikrama. Yeah. So it is limited. By what is it limited? What is... Yeah, but in terms of our body, yes? By? Ahankar. This is mind. There is a concept, okay? There is a concept. But besides that, Srila Prabhupada explains that each body has a different capacity. That is the limitation. There is a limitation according to the capacity. Each body has a different capacity. In physical strength, in mental strength, in intellectual strength, there is a different capacity. Animal bodies have a specific type of capacity. Some can swim, some can fly, some can see in the dark. So the capacity of the senses, mind, intelligence, that is determined by the activities, the past activities, by the karmas. As much punya, as much capacity. And if we produce papa, then the capacity reduces. So this is for us to know. We should avoid committing sin because it reduces our capacity. And then we become entrenched in a body that can do hardly anything, like a little, you know, bug walking on the ground, or a little worm, you know. How much can he do? How much can he know? So, but they are also, in that body there is also a kshetragya, there is also a soul. And that soul, as Prabhupada was preaching to the mouse, how did you get there? What the hell, Pop, you have performed to become a mouse? So this is the body here. And what about the kshetragya? The soul? The soul is the kshetragya. And this kshetragya, it is, in general, the soul who is, it can be the soul when the soul is identified with the body. In this purport, Srila Prabhupada says, it is the person who identifies himself with the body is called the kshetragya. Hmm? Huh? That's in the next verse. So this body is called the field, and that one who knows this body is called the knower of the field. Some say that Krishna says, some say that the two are very close to each other, which is indicated by the word idam that he has used in this second verse. That the body and the knower of body, they are very intimately connected. Very close friends, sometimes enemy, but they are very, very close to each other. According to his capacity, so this is the field of activity for the conditioned soul. The idea is that the liberated souls, when they get liberated, they don't have any more that body, right? But if the soul becomes liberated in this lifetime, during his lifetime, but he is still kshetragya, he knows the body. But in general, the soul is in this body because it is conditioned. According to his capacity to dominate material nature, he gets a field of activity. So this is what we said, according to previous karmas, we get punya, or we get papa. And the punya determines our capacity to work in this world and to dominate material nature to a certain extent. The body is made of senses, and Prabhupada is explaining these things. Important to understand also is that when we say, when we think, now we will learn how to disidentify. Sometimes we think, I'm happy. And at that time, or we think, I'm a man. I'm a woman. I'm a dog. I'm a cat. So when we think, in general, I'm happy, we are convinced that who is happy? It's me. I'm happy. And I'm identifying with that state of consciousness. I'm happy. But what we are going to hear in this year is that I and happy, two different things. Not one, two. I is the kshetragya, and happy is what?
Chaitanya.
is the kshetra. It is part of the kshetra. It is an interaction of the elements that form the kshetra. Wow, Rukmini. Yeah. You're in trouble, huh? So like this for everything. I am a man, but am I really? No. The man is the body, the kshetra. And me, I am the knower of the body. I am the observer. So this is very basic knowledge, but here we will definitely try to identify. We will see so many things that are so much part of ourselves that we always think to be ourselves. And in this chapter, it is totally denied. This is not ourselves. This happiness is not me. This distress, that is not me. It is part of the kshetra. So let us hear more in verse 3. We hear more about the kshetra. About the kshetragya. Who is the knower of the field? And we also hear what is knowledge. Because Arjuna asked, what is the field? What is the knower of the field? What is knowledge? And what is the object of knowledge? So here Krishna is giving a very short descriptions. Then after that he will expand more. Kshetragyam chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharata kshetra kshetragya yor jnanam yata jnanam matam mama. So the first two lines describe the kshetragya, and the second two lines define jnanam, the knowledge. O sign of Bharata, you should understand that I am also the knower in all bodies. And to understand this body and its owner is called knowledge. That is my opinion. Okay, so let us take first the first part. I am also the knower in all bodies. Kshetragyam cha api mam vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharata. So in the first verse, Krishna said that there is one kshetra and one kshetragya. Who is the kshetragya? The soul. And in this verse he says, sarva kshetreshu, in all the bodies, in all the bodies, there is also a knower that is in all the bodies. And who is that knower? That is me, Krishna says. And we know it is Krishna in the form of the Paramatma. Kshetragyam mam vidhi. And this is an important verse here, because on one hand we can, the personalists take this verse to prove that, you know, in one body there is one kshetragya who's the soul, and in many bodies there is one kshetragya who is the super soul. Srila Prabhupada explains this, but the impersonalists don't take it like this. They say that this cha is linking the previous verse with this one. He says that in the first verse he says there is the knower of the body, and you should know that it's me. Therefore they see the soul and the super soul as one, because that is their philosophy and they try to see that everywhere. But it is explained by the Vaishnava Acharyas that no, this cha indicates the plurality of the kshetragya. There is another knower. There is not just one knower, there is another one, cha. Srila Prabhupada indicates this, I think, in the end of his purport. The word cha is significant, for it indicates the total number of bodies. And it also indicates there are two kshetragyas. That is the opinion of Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan. Krishna is the super soul present in each and every body apart from the individual soul. So in the beginning of the purport, Srila Prabhupada clearly explains for us what this verse means. In every body, there are two souls, the individual soul and the super soul. Because the super soul is the plenary expansion of the Supreme Lord, Krishna, he says, I am also the knower, but I am not the individual knower of the body. I am the super knower. I am present in every body as the Paramatma. So the soul is present in one body and the super soul is present in all the bodies. So he is the knower, and Prabhupada explains he is also the controller. So what happens is that there is a primary kshetragya and there is a secondary kshetragya. There is a primary knower, there is a secondary knower. There is a primary controller, because not only he is the knower, but he is also the controller. He is also the owner. Ishavasyamidam sarvam. So he controls everything. The individual may be the knower of his own body, but he is not in knowledge of other bodies. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present as the Super Soul in all bodies, knows everything about all bodies. The body consists of senses. The Supreme Lord is Rishikesh, which means the controller of the senses. He is the original controller of the senses, just as the king is the original controller of all the activities of the state. The citizens are secondary controllers. So we control little things on daily basis, what will be the menu for the lunch, or what will be these small, small things we decide. But when we are going to die, when we are going to take birth, that we don't decide. So there is another controller, and that is the super soul. I think Srila Prabhupada refers, we will read in 15:17. Where is it? No, it's not 15:17. It's 13:23. In 13:23, Krishna will make it very clear, in case we are not convinced with this explanation of the verse here. In 13:23, he is going to explain the super soul. And that super soul, he will refer to as Paramatma and Purusha Para. It says, yet in this body there is another, a transcendental enjoyer, who is the Lord, the Supreme Proprietor, who exists as the overseer and permitter, and who is known as the Super Soul. So this Kshetragya is the knower of the field, and Arjuna has asked about Purusha also. So the Kshetragya and the Purusha, they are the same person. And as there are two Kshetragyas, so there are two Purushas. It is the same. Gya means knowledge, so he's the one who knows, and Purusha means the enjoyer, is the one who enjoys. So there is a primary enjoyer and a secondary enjoyer. Now Krishna also explains knowledge. What is knowledge? To understand this body, the kshetra, and its knower, the kshetragya, that is called knowledge. And as we heard that there are two kshetragyas, it means we should know the nature, we should know, what else? We should know the nature, we should know the soul, and we should know the super soul. Prabhupada says, knowledge of the constitution of the body. So we should know the body is the kshetra. We should know how it is constituted, what it's made of, what are the different elements. We should know the constitution of the individual soul, what is its nature. And we should know the constitution of the super soul. This, in terms of Vedic literature, it is called jnana. And Prabhupada makes it clear that to understand both the soul and the super soul as one yet distinct, that is perfect knowledge. Because the jnanis, they consider oneness between the soul and the super soul. They only distinguish between two things. They don't see three. One who does not understand the field of activity and the knower of activity is not in perfect knowledge. One has to understand the position of Prakriti, nature, Purusha, the enjoyer of nature, and Ishvara, the knower, who dominates or controls nature and the individual souls. There are three Brahman conceptions. He's just explaining the same things in terms of Gyan. There are three Brahman conceptions. Prakriti is Brahman as the field of activity. So now, because Krishna, Arjuna has asked about Prakriti, Purusha, Kshetra, Kshetragya, Gyanam, Gyeyam. So now we see how they are all connected. This Kshetra is made of Prakriti. So Prakriti is Brahman as the field of activities. And the Jiva is also Brahman. We heard that before. He is spirit. And he is a particle of the Brahman. He is trying to control material nature. And the controller of both of them is also Brahman. But he is the factual controller. Also called Parabrahman. The Supreme Brahman. And it is the personality of Godhead, either as Vishnu or as the ultimate personality of Godhead, Krishna. And what is the difference between the two? One is fallible and one is infallible. The Jiva becomes controlled by material nature, whereas the Ishvara never becomes controlled. On the other hand, it fully controls material nature. So here we understand that the Lord, the Jiva should know the body, himself and the Lord. And the Lord as the knower, he knows the field, and on top of it he knows all the fields. Plus, he knows the soul also. And all the souls. Now, in order to explain, or further obscure, I would say, the concepts of three Brahman, Srila Prabhupada gives a wonderful analogy. Which analogy? The painter, the painting and the easel. And you are welcome to speculate which one is which. Anyone has an opinion? The painting is the kshetra, she says. Yeah? Painting is the kshetra. She was brave. Anybody has any other opinion? The painter is Krishna. He must be. Sorry? Easel is the support. You know, the support. Yes. And on the support there is a painting and then there is a painter. Yes, so you can torture it as you like. either the easel is, anyway, the way I have it here is the painter is Krishna. The painting is a living entity, and the easel is material nature. Material nature is that which behind everything, and then there is the painting, and then there is the painter. But if you have a different opinion, it's fine. The paint? That no, there's only three Brahman. No paint. There's only three Brahman. I had another one in which the easel is Krishna, and the painting is nature. And the painter is the jiva, but this analogy is a bit obscure, at least to me. Any questions on this verse?
What is the conclusion of this?
I don't know. I'm not quite sure. Anyone knows what is the conclusion on this? I don't know about this one, how it is exactly. I've tried to find, but I'm not sure. It's a little difficult to understand. Painter, it's Krishna because he's the active principle in the thing here. And the painting, the living entity, who is controlled by Krishna, and the living entity is set in the material nature, which is the easel. Yeah. Yes, Prabhuji, do you have a question? The Prakriti is also Brahman. No, the Prakriti, in the Upanishads, the Prakriti is referred to, Aribor, is referred to as Brahman. You want a quotation for this? I don't know whether Prabhupada refers to that. Yes, there is. It will come in this section. Mahat Brahma. Mahat Brahma. When all the living entities, they are produced from material nature. That time it is called Brahma. What is that? Yeah, yes. I think that's that one. Which number is that?
Yeah,
14.4. Let's see whether it's there. 14.3. Mama Yonia Mahat Brahma. Mahat Brahma. Yeah, it's called Mahat Brahma. It's the Mahat Tattva. Mama Yonia Mahat Brahma. Tasmin garbham dadamyaham. The Mahat Brahma is the Mahat Tattva. It is material nature. 14.3. 14.4. Yes. Brahma Mahat. Same. Tasam Brahma Mahat aham bija pradapita. So the material nature is referred to as Brahman. Meaning, in one sense, there is nothing but Brahman. And the material nature is just a covered portion of the Brahman. Okay, so we go to text number 4. Mm-hmm. So now he is going to describe the field of activity, or actually he is going to introduce different aspects of the field of activity in very short words, which are almost like codes. And then he's going to expand on this on the further verses. In 6-7, he's going to expand on what these things are. So let us hear. He's still describing the field here, the kshetra. Tat kshetram yatcha yadrikcha yadvikari yatascayat satchayo yat prabhavascha tat samasena meshrinu. So samasena means in summary. He's going to teach us these things in summary. If we want to know more, Krishna says we should study the Vedanta Sutra and the Upanishads. For those who get a taste now. Now please hear my brief description. We are very fortunate because we are hearing these things directly from Krishna. We could be hearing from someone else. Now please hear my brief description of this field of activity and how it is constituted, what its changes are, whence it is produced, who that knower of the field of activities is, and what his influences are. So these are all different terms that he has coined in this verse here. The Srila Prabhupada explains more in this purport. The Lord is describing the field of activities and the knower of the field. So what is it that one has to know? Because Krishna said you should know the field and you should know the knower of a field. So what is it constituted of? So here, one has to know how this body is constituted. So first thing is, yatcha, which means the constituents, the materials of which this body is made. What is this body made of? What are the different constituents? So that we should know. Then the next thing is, under whose control this body is working. This is called yadrik. Under whose control? And you'll be surprised what the control is here. Is it me who is the control of this body? No? The controllers here of the body will be identified later as desire, hatred, happiness, distress. They control this body. When happiness is there, this body smiles. When distress is there, tears come from the eyes of this body. I have nothing to do in all that. Next is how the changes are taking place. This is, the changes are called vikara, yad vikari. The changes, vikara. The transformations. What are the transformations? We know there are 6 changes in this body. What are these transformations and how do they take place? Next, where from the changes are coming? This is yataha. From what this body arises and where from the changes are coming in this body? Next is what the causes are or what the reasons are. And this is called yat. Then what the ultimate goal of the individual soul is and what the actual form of the individual soul is. This is saha yaha. Who is he actually? What is the actual form and the actual goal of the individual soul? And then there is number seven. So this we have enumerated six now. The seventh one, one should also know the distinction between the individual living soul and the super soul, and especially their different influences, their potential. This is called prabhava. Yat prabhava. So we had the constituents, the elements, under whose control it is, which means also what the qualities of the body are, and then where from the changes are coming, what are the causes of this body, what is the actual form of this body, what are the different transformations, and what is the influence of the soul and what is the influence of the super soul. So in case you are confused, Srila Prabhupada says, one just has to understand this Bhagavad Gita directly from the description given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all this will be clarified by hearing. One thing that Prabhupada is warning us is that the danger of this section, or the advantage of this section, it's a danger, it's an advantage. The danger is if we misunderstand the soul and the super soul to be one, we are doomed. So Prabhupada warns us that one should be very careful not to consider the Lord in everybody to be one with the individual soul, the jiva. This is something like equating the potent and the impotent. In fact, in the Shastras, the Lord is called Isha and the Jiva is called Anisha. And Isha means capable, the one who is potent, the one who is capable, also the controller, Isha Vasyamidam Sarva. So the Isha, the potent, is there. And the Anisha is the incapable, that's us. We have no strength of our own. Number five. Rishi bir bahudha gitam chando bir vividhai prithak brahma sutra padeshcheva hetu madhya vinishchitaihi. That knowledge of the field of activities and of the knower of activities is described by various sages in various Vedic writings. It is especially presented in the Vedanta Sutra with all reasoning as to cause and effect. What was this?
This is the top question.
No. Prabhuji is also living? She's not well at all. So now what is Krishna doing? In this verse? Is what?
Verse 5,
yes?
He's referring to authority.
Yeah, he's referring to authority. He's taking his references. Because before that, I think he had told us, that is my opinion in number 3. Matam Mama, when he explained what is knowledge, he said that knowledge means you should know the field and the knower of the field. That is my opinion about what knowledge is about. So now, he's saying that I'm not the only one who's saying that, in case you have a doubt. Some others also are saying that. So who is talking about these things? He gives a reference. Where is the reference from? Only Vedanta Sutra? No. Rishi Bhi, the wise sages. And then Chandobhi. What is the Chandobhi? The Vedic hymns. And then Brahma Sutra Pada. The Brahma Sutras. So this actually, if you remember in your study of Ishopanishad, that the Vedic literatures are divided into three sections. Anyone remembers what are the three divisions? Yes? No, another division. You don't remember that? The Vedic knowledge is divided into, there are three sources of Vedic knowledge: Shruti, Smriti, and what? Shruti, Smriti. Two only, Shruti, Smriti. But it's called Prasthana Trai. And Trai means three. Sometimes it is also presented as Shruti, Smriti. But there is a third one. That's why he's quoting the Brahma Sutra. The third one is called Nyaya Prasthan. There is the Shruti Prasthan, Smriti Prasthan, and the Nyaya Prasthan. Which means, what is the Shruti? The Vedas, which includes the Vedas include the Puranas and the what? You are making khichdi. The Upanishads, Vedashir, the head of the Vedas is the Upanishads, which is the philosophical presentation part. It's the Gyan Khan. So he's quoting from the Vedas here, which is Chanda, the Vedic Chandas. That is an evidence. And then what is the other evidence? What is the Smriti? So the Vedas of the Shruti is the four Vedas in which we find the Karma Kanda, the Jnana Kanda, the Upasana Kanda. And mostly it refers to, when we come to Jnana, it refers to the Upanishads. And then what is the Smriti? What comes under Smriti? Puranas. The Puranas. The Mahabharata. So here it is referred to as Rishibhi Bahudha Gitam. It is described in many ways by the Rishis. Because in general, Shruti means the knowledge which is considered to be the breathing of Narayan, that is given at the time it appears. It's a sound form. It's called Brahma Shabda. It's a sound form of the Supreme Lord, which appears at the beginning of creation. And the Upanishads are considered to be part of that stock of knowledge. The Upanishads are not written, they are revealed to different sages. And the Smriti are the realizations of the sages, which are based, it is based on the Shruti, but it's the realizations of the Rishis. They take the points from the Upanishads and they explain them in a way which is more accessible, more understandable. Many times it is understood that it is difficult to access the Vedas, but the Pancham Veda, the fifth Veda of the Smriti, which consists mostly of the Puranas and the Mahabharata, that is more easy of access for people who are more simple. In the Smriti, we also include the Pancharatras. And now, what is the Nyaya Prasthan? Nyaya Prasthan consists of different philosophies which are derived from the Upanishads. Philosophies. So in general, there are six philosophies, Shad Darshan. There are six Vedic philosophies. And all of them are, at least five of them, are more or less incomplete. They do not give the complete picture. But the Vedanta Sutra is considered to be the conclusion of all philosophy. So therefore, Krishna here is referring to the Brahma Sutra, which is also called Badarayani Sutra, Vedanta Sutra, and so on. It has many names, and it was compiled by whom? Srila Vyasadeva, yes. So Srila Prabhupada says that in the purport, and one of the most prominent persons in the Smriti is Parashar Muni. He's one of very prominent sages amongst those who have written Dharma Shastras and all kinds of Smriti Shastras. So he's taking reference from them. And what will be the particular reference that Krishna is going to try to make by referring to this? What is the main thing that he will try to prove by referring to these literatures? The distinction between the soul and the super soul. This is the point that he wants to drive home. That there is this distinction between the soul and the super soul. Srila Prabhupada explains this in the beginning of the purport. Krishna is the highest authority in explaining this knowledge. Still, as a matter of course, learned scholars and standard authorities always give evidence from previous authorities. Krishna is explaining this most controversial point regarding the duality and non-duality of the soul and the supersoul by referring to a scripture, the Vedanta, which is accepted as authority. And then Prabhupada explains, he also refers to the sages and so on. The word Chandobi refers to the various Vedic literatures, the Taittiriya Upanishad, for example, which is a branch of the Yajurveda, describes nature, the living entity, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada begins to give some examples. The Katha Upanishad, we know, tells of the two birds on the tree of the body. So this distinction is found in the Upanishads. Okay, now other things Srila Prabhupada talks in his he starts speaking from the Upanishads, Taittiriya Upanishad, which tries to define how to isolate this supreme, the supreme personality, the supreme truth, the supreme absolute. According to the Brahma Sutra, the supreme absolute truth is known as Anandamayo Abhyasa. So Anandamaya is known like this. The Supreme is known as Anandamaya. So Srila Prabhupada explains that in the Upanishads, there are five stages of understanding of the truth, or five stages of consciousness, of awareness of the world, which are defined in the Upanishads. And this is called Brahma Puccham Pratishtha. Brahma Puccham. Five different levels of consciousness. Five stages of consciousness, which correspond to different energies of the Lord. They are all emanating from the Lord. But they are symptomatic of a different level of perception. So what are these five different levels of consciousness as they are defined here in the purport? This is what is called Annamai. Then what is the next? Pranamai. Gyanmai, which is also called Manomai. Manomai, Gyanmai is the same. And then there is Vijnanmai, and then there is Anandamai. So here Srila Prabhupada explains, what is Annamai? This is a manifestation of the Supreme Lord's energy. And what does that energy do? That energy gives a specific type of consciousness. Remember, the Lord is the source of consciousness. So when we are under the energy of the Lord, which manifests as Annamai, so what will be the consciousness of the jiva at that time? What does Krishna say? It is material consciousness, yes. And what is the symptom of that consciousness? Dependence on food, yes. Means food conscious. We can understand that. That level we can understand. Annamai. And this is the first level of consciousness which is manifested in the baby. You know, when the baby is born, there is one prominent sense which is always active, which is the tongue, the mouth, you know. Everything, how does the baby experiments with the world? He puts everything in the mouth. This is Annamai. So this is the lower stage of consciousness. And then when the child grows, then the consciousness will also grow. The consciousness will evolve. And the next thing which will happen is Pranamai. Prabhupada explains, food conscious. A child or an animal is satisfied only by getting nice food. So Prabhupada also says this is the level animal life, Annamai. Only thinking of food. This stage of consciousness in which the goal is to eat sumptuously is called Annamai. Anna means food. So this is the goal of life. This is the lower part of consciousness. Now what is the next stage? Prabhupada says then there is Pranamai. After realizing the Supreme Absolute Truth in food, one can realize the Absolute Truth in the living symptoms or life forms. So this can also be explained as follows. It's the consciousness of being alive. Self-conscious. You know, like initially a small child, he can jump in the fire. Why? He doesn't understand. He doesn't have the knowledge of the fire, and he also does not, he hasn't understood. He's not self-conscious. He doesn't understand. So, but slowly, slowly we become conscious of ourselves and of the fact that this body is destructible, right? So then from this Pranamai actually manifests the fact that the idea that the need to protect oneself, the sense of insecurity, fear, all these things, they come from Pranamai, the consciousness of one's existence. At this stage, when one is situated, Pranamai, consciousness of one's existence, that's all. Next, there is Gyanamai. Gyanamai, do not misunderstand, it is also called Manomai. And what is this? Realization extends beyond the living symptoms to the point of thinking, feeling, and willing. So first we are conscious that I need food. Give me food. And the next thing is, I'm aware of being alive and I feel I need protection. I feel insecure. I defend. And the next thing is something a bit more evolved. I become aware of the thinking process and I think. I think, therefore I am. This is called Gyanamai or Manomai. The mental platform. The material civilization is primarily situated in these three stages. Annamai, Pranamai and Manomai. This is all material consciousness. Awareness of one's dependence on food, awareness of one's existence, the fact that one is living, and also identifying life in others, making the distinction between a stone and a plant, we make a distinction. So that is due to the ability to identify this, the presence of life, the existence of life. Yeah, this is pranamai. And then there is manomai, which is the awareness of the thoughts, feelings, desires. But all this is on the material platform. So these three stages are material consciousness. It's awareness of matter. The first concern of civilized person is economic development. What is economic development? Which level is it? In this, yeah, but in this three. What is economic development? Annamoy. It is annamoy. Economic development is, why economic development? Because need the food. Food, food for the mouth, food for the ears, food for the nose, food for all the senses. And then the next concern is defense against being annihilated. What is this? Pranamoy. And the next consciousness is mental speculation, the philosophical approach to the values of life. Then we enter the spiritual platform. In Gyanamai, then there is Brahman realization called Vijnanamai, in which the living entity's mind and life symptoms are distinguished from the living entity itself. So meaning when one understands himself that he is not this material body. So Srila Prabhupada says, this is a bit in between matter and spirit. It's an intellectual understanding, but still, it is an identification of the spirit. Prabhupada says, if by the evolutionary process of philosophical life, one happens to reach to the platform of intellectual life and understands that he is not this material body but a spirit soul, one is situated in the Vijnanamai stage. So Vijnanamai, understanding oneself as spirit. The next and supreme stage is Anandamai, realization of the all blissful nature. Thus there are five stages of Brahman realization, which are called Brahma Puccham. Out of these, the first three, Annamai, Pranamai and Gyanamai, involve the fields of activities of the living entities. In other words, as we said, it is material. Fields of activity means material. Transcendental to all these fields of activities is the Supreme Lord, who is called Anandamai. So now, again, there is a point here, is that generally, this description of the Brahmapuccham is very much a description which is liked by the impersonalists. And it's found also in the Upanishads. And usually it involves, Anandamai involves coming to the platform of Brahman realization, Brahma Bhuta. It's actually the Brahma Bhuta platform when one actually realizes, you know, beyond matter. So Srila Prabhupada explains, this Anandamai is explained in the Bhagavad Gita as the Brahma Bhuta stage. You know this verse? Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Nashochati Nakamchati. And then? Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. So Srila Prabhupada explains that we should not be confused. The impersonalists say that this Anandamai is Brahma Bhuta stage. But the Bhagavad Gita explains that Brahma Bhuta is a gate. When one achieves Brahma Bhuta, it is followed or it should be associated with Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. One who comes to the platform of Brahma Bhuta The next thing is, it takes to bhakti. In other words, this Anandamaya refers not to the realization of the Brahman alone. It refers to the transcendental state of consciousness in relationship with the Bhagavan, with the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada explains, the Mayavadi philosophers consider Anandamaya to be the state of being merged in the Supreme. To them, Anandamaya means that the super soul and the individual soul become one. But the actual Anandamaya, blissful stage, Ananda means blissful, as opposed as Dukhalayam Ashaswata. This is the spiritual platform. This Anandamaya stage is obtained when one is engaged in devotional service. This is what is explained in Bhagavad Gita. That is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Mad bhaktim labhate param. The Brahma Bhuta Anandamaya stage is complete only when there is the exchange of love between the Supreme and the subordinate living entities. So these are the five stages of evolution of our consciousness. The ultimate consciousness is experience in contact with the Lord. One time somebody asked Srila Prabhupada on a morning walk, do these states of consciousness manifest in different species of life? One devotee asked. What did Prabhupada say? Is it only experienced by the human being? Yes or no? Yes, no? Sorry? Ah, yes, she makes distinction that some are experienced, so in general, yes, meaning some are experienced in other species and the full five can be experienced in human life. Yes, because they are not states of consciousness of the human, they are stages of consciousness of the being. You know, we are a human being. Human means the body. Being refers to be. The being is the soul. See, even unconsciously we know that we are Kshetragya. Because even in English, people call themselves human beings. But the being is a verb, to be. Being is a participle, to be. And being a present participle, but when you talk of being in English, it means something which is for a long time. Like going, I'm going. I go means I start. But I'm going means I'm on the way. It's long. Being, that which is there from the beginning to the end of the human life, that is the being, and that's you, and that's the soul. So this consciousness is the consciousness of the soul. So therefore in animals and plants also. The devotee, so Srila Prabhupada said yes. The devotee asked, so like plants for example, they would be in the Annamaya state of consciousness? Prabhupada said, yes. Simply eating. The plants, they are simply feeding. They don't, like, do they defend? Do the plants defend? Except some plants, there are some sensitive plants, a few of them, that have a higher consciousness. They are almost between plant and animal. They can catch things and they feel. If you touch them, they retract. So otherwise the plants are simply in Annamaya. And the animals, they have Pranamaya. They always fight, they protect. And anything else? Do they have manomoy? Animals? Do they think?
Yes.
They speak? They speak. They have feelings. The chimpanzee. So these three levels can be in the lower species, but the higher levels are only evolved by human beings. And even this manomay, gyanmay, in animals, it is very minimal. Mostly it's in human beings. Sorry? Maharaj Bharat, when he became a deer, he had all five. Yes. Yeah. Yes. That was a special mercy, it is said. So, Srila Prabhupada explains some things about the Brahma Sutras. They are very nicely arranged because here Krishna has mentioned Hetu Madbhir Vinishchitaihe, meaning that the sages have explained these things with cause and effect, how things are related. So here Srila Prabhupada is explaining that these things have been explained in the Brahma Sutra, and the Brahma Sutra is definitely organized as cause and effect, very systematic presentation. He's quoting some of the sutras here which relate to our topic, the field of activities, the living entity, and the third one, the Supreme Lord, which is beyond the two. Now, text 6 and 7, Mahabhutanya hankaro buddhiravyaktamevacha indriyani dasaikam cha pancha chandriya gotkaraha icha dvesha sukham dukham sanghatas chetana dhriti etat kshetram samasena savikara mudahritam. So in these two verses, Krishna is describing the kshetra. What, you remember, what were the different questions about the kshetra? The first question was, what is its constitution? What are the different materials it is made of? What changes are coming? And so on. So this is what he is explaining here. The first verse explains the 24 elements of which the kshetra is made of. And the second verse, number 7, explains the interaction of these elements which are perceived by us. The five great elements, false ego, intelligence, the unmanifested, the 10 senses and the mind, the 5 sense objects, desire, hatred, happiness, distress, the aggregate, the life symptoms and convictions. All these are considered, in summary, to be the field of activities and its interactions. So what is the field of activity here? The five great elements. So, what is this? Earth, water, fire, air, ether. So these are the ones. They are called Mahabhutas, the great elements, gigantes, great elements. And then the false ego is there, Ahankara. Then there is the intelligence, Buddhi, which sometimes is also called the Mahatattva, in the sense that the Buddhi is considered to be, like, it comes from the totality of material existence. And then there is the unmanifested stage of the three modes of material nature, the avyakta. This refers to the pradhan, which is the first original state of material nature. The pradhan, that is the material nature before it is agitated by the glands of Mahavishnu. You can take it, it's like different levels of the elements. It always exists, it is there. it is the, as we use sometimes, some kind of a, it is the support of all the other elements. They all come from that. It's the support of all the elements. There is the unmanifested stage. It still exists. It's not that it's gone. So this unmanifested stage manifests presently as the buddhi, as the mind, as the five gross elements. So it is considered part of the kshetra. It exists, it is there, it's like a substratum. What is the support of all these elements? The elements, like the earth, water, fire, they are the manifested active part, like active, we could say, active part. And the pradhan is the unmanifested, inactive part of material nature. But it is there. And then there are five senses for acquiring knowledge: eyes, ear, nose, tongue, and skin. Then there are five working senses: the voice, the legs, the hands, the anus, and genitals. Then above the senses, there is the mind, which is within, therefore we can't see it, and which can be called the sense within. So sometimes the mind is called the 11th sense. In the Western culture, they call it the sixth sense, sixième sens, sixth sense. Yeah, okay, yes, yeah, also. Yeah, because you know, always these things are either made more compact or more explained like that. And then, therefore, including the mind, there are 11 senses. Then it's not finished. Then there are the five objects of the senses. The objects: smell, taste, form, touch, and sound. Now the aggregate of these 24 elements is called the field of activity. The totality of this makes the field of activity. So it's easy to remember. There are 4 by 5. That's 20. And the additional 4 we should remember. What are the additional 4? The mind, the what? The ego, the intelligence, and the pradhan, the avyakta, the unmanifested nature. So very nice. Now Srila Prabhupada after this explains, so this is the field. And then after this Srila Prabhupada explains the interactions of the field. Verse number 7. These are the interactions. So what are the interactions here? Well, first it begins with this. The aggregate of these 24 elements is called the field of activity. So the aggregate, that also comes under the interactions. When all the aggregate is the body, the totality. So that's an interaction. When everything is put together, it becomes the aggregate. This was defined as, what is the aggregate here? Sanghata. The aggregate, yes. Then there are desires, hatred, happiness, distress. What are these? We should know next time it happens to us. What is this? This is what the jnanis do, you see, to cut all feelings away. What is this? Interactions of what? Which kshetra? Which part of the kshetra? No, they are not interactions of the mind. Five great elements. From the five great elements come desire, hatred, happiness, distress. So next time you feel distressed, what you should remember? Oh, the five elements are disturbed. Nothing to be worried about. Let's understand. Do I need a little water? Do I need a little earth? Should I take a breath? Usually if you take a deep breath, it's all okay. You just do little one or two pranayam and everything is okay. Take a deep breath, drink a little water, take a little laddu, mahaprasadam, and what else? Go in the sun, and everything will be okay. Change place, ether, space, and everything will be okay because it's just a disturbance of the five gross elements. Okay? I didn't understand. The mind, if you study further, is that which makes you identify with these five elements. You see? The trouble comes from the five elements. Because we have a material body, the trouble is there. If there were no material body, there wouldn't be any happiness or distress. And the mind, when it's an enemy, it makes us identify with these five elements, with the gross body. And because of that identification, then there is experience of suffering. Then, the living symptoms represented by consciousness and convictions are the manifestation of the subtle body, mind, ego, and intelligence. So this means that, you know, desire, hatred, happiness, distress, they come from the five, because of the five great elements, because there is a gross body. Now, because there is a mind, ego, and intelligence, then what is there? There is consciousness and convictions. Obviously, the conviction. Now we are in the subtle world. So the convictions, they come from what? The conviction? Mostly they come from the intelligence. And then consciousness, it says. But what kind of consciousness is that? Because consciousness doesn't come from the subtle body. Consciousness comes from the soul. But here we are talking of covered consciousness, which is mostly of the nature of annamai, pranamai, manomai. This kind of consciousness, why is it there? Because the soul is covered by mind, ego, and what else? Intelligence. Because we are covered by mind, ego, and intelligence, then we experience material consciousness. This manomai, pranamai, and annamai. These are the manifestation of the subtle body. And this is all included within the field of activities. Like sometimes we have an opinion, it is like this, Prabhu, it is like this, it is like this. This is issued from where?
Conviction.
It's a conviction. So many times our conviction, they are actually, we should not think it is like this, we should, you know, that's why Krishna is referring to the Shastra. Because otherwise it's a conviction, and the conviction comes from the subtle body, some interactions of the subtle elements. So it has nothing to do with the soul. Then the next, oh, this is the best paragraph, I'm sure you noticed it. The five great elements are a gross representation of the false ego, which in turn represents the primal stage of false ego, technically called the materialistic conception or tamasa buddhi. intelligence in ignorance. This further represents the unmanifested stage of the three modes of material nature. The unmanifested modes of material nature are called pradhan. Should I repeat? So here Krishna is explaining further, as he has explained everything, some things is coming from the five great elements produce desire, hatred, etc. The subtle elements produce the convictions, the material consciousness, and so on. Now, where do these elements come from? The five great elements, where do they come from? Yeah, they come from the false ego interacting with the three modes, and particularly interacting with the tamogun. So Prabhupada is explaining the relationship of how everything is an interaction of each other. You see? So now these gross elements, they actually are an interaction of the ego and the mode of ignorance. And of course this mode of ignorance comes from where? It comes from the pradhan. First there is the pradhan. So this is how the thing is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that there is the pradhan, which is unmanifest, and with the action of the glance of Mahavishnu, then this pradhan is activated and it starts manifesting some variety, which comes first as the Mahatattva. And this the first element which is produced is the false ego. And this false ego, when it interacts with the Mahatattva, which has three different gunas, there is goodness, passion, and ignorance, then from the ego are produced different other things. So the false ego, ahankar, when it is mixed with ignorance, it produces the five gross elements. This is what Prabhupada is explaining here. And this stage, it is called tamasi buddhi, which is actually a stage, sort of a stage of the mahatattva. Yes? Yeah, they come one after the next. It produces the sound, and then the sound produces the air produces the fire, and then so on like this, the water, the earth. And within those elements, these elements, the five elements, they produce the qualities within... it produces the sound. The sound is related to ether. Ether is the element. It produces ether. The quality of ether is sound. So there is a continuous interaction, a link between all these elements. So they are called, therefore, you know, they are all interacted with each other. And they are produced by each other. When the ahankar is mixed with goodness, it's called vaikarika buddhi. It's mixed with goodness, then at that time it produces the mind. Believe it or not, our mind is in goodness. Oh my God. That's the problem. The mind needs to be in goodness. When the mind is in goodness, we are free from trouble. But when the mind is influenced by tamas and rajas, then it is enemy. When the mind is in goodness, it's very favorable. It is the original state of the mind to be in goodness. And when the ahankar is mixed with passion, it produces material intelligence and it produces the other 10 senses. One who desires to know the 24 elements in detail along with their interaction, should study the philosophy in more details. In Bhagavad Gita, a summary only is given. The body is a representation of all these factors, and there are changes of the body as well. So here Prabhupada is explaining something else, that due to all these interactions, the body changes. This was called vikar, I think, the changes of the body, vikara. The changes are six in number. The body is born, grows, stays, produces byproducts. Then it begins to decay, and at the last stage it vanishes. Therefore, this is the conclusion which we should retain, the field is a non-permanent material thing. So this is what the jnanis think of. They analyze the material elements and distinguish them from the soul. And by the power of this knowledge, they control the senses, the mind, everything. By the power of that knowledge. Because like suppose you get all emotional, if you remember, this is, what is this? Some interaction of the five elements. Let's take a little water. And it's over. Feeling fine. What is this fine? An interaction of another element. Let's be sober. Now I'm breathing. What is this breathing? Yes, this is a jnani.
The words are getting crazy.
No, not at all. Very self-control. But it's not on the verge of getting crazy, it's on the verge of always, it's a control which is very, like, shaky. It's very shaky. It's very shaky. Because, as we know, the senses are not engaged. They are just being kept in balance somehow. Yeah, the Vaisheshika philosophy tells you that. It's a bunch of chemicals. That's atheistic gyan. The atheistic gyan understands all these things to be interactions, but does not understand the soul completely, and especially not the super soul. So there are different aspects of gyan, but when it is very impersonalistic, then you end up with materialism. The Vaisheshika philosophy, Prabhupada says, is basically materialism. It's like what the scientists are promoting today.
If we remove the part of the soul and super soul from this, then is it actually a reaction of chemicals, the rest of it?
Yeah.
Right?
No, but it doesn't. But the point is that it actually does not happen. The reactions will not take place unless the soul is there.
No, for sure.
It will not take place. They try to see it like this, but no interaction will take place unless the active principle is there, because this is all matter and interactions of matter. But who started the interaction? We heard that the prakriti is apara, is inert. It's called jada prakriti. The prakriti is inert, it doesn't move. Yes, in the pradhan is, it's immobile, it doesn't move. And once the Lord glances, then everything starts moving.
Chemical imbalance.
Chemical imbalance, yes, Prabhuji. But the original chemical imbalance is rebellion. The rebellion to the authority of the Supreme Lord. That's the original chemical.
Big one.
And that's not chemical. Yes. Tomorrow, what do we have? Do we have two classes tomorrow? Very good. We have two classes. So we will start at 12 and a little later. That's too early. I'm sorry. But tomorrow we will resume that schedule, and don't be worried. It's almost the last time. I think there is this one and maybe one on Saturday, double class on Saturday and double class on Monday. And after this, there are no more double classes, except that 2-3 times I will have to take a longer session to cover up something. So for tomorrow, you please read the next session thoroughly, so that we quickly go over the items of knowledge. There are 20 items of knowledge. Tomorrow, the first class, we will deal with what is jnanam, what is knowledge. And Krishna will present knowledge mostly as a process. There's a process how to acquire knowledge. And I would invite you to compare what is said in the Bhagavad Gita to what is said by Srila Prabhupada in the Ishopanishad. If you remember which verse? Verse 10. You look in the purport of verse 10 and you will find 18 items of knowledge. There are 20 in the Gita. They are same. The 17 and 18, Prabhupada has clubbed 4 in 2 numbers. So it's the same numbers. So it's interesting to see how Srila Prabhupada has explained in the Upanishad and in the Bhagavad Gita. And then we'll proceed on Gyeyam. What is the object of knowledge? So Srila Prabhupada ki.